$1.
We're holding on.
Where were you yesterday?
We were holding on.
Where? It was too cold to come.
Okay, right? We're holding on $1 from $1, the first line of the widest lines.
The first
line of the widest lines on $1 from $1. The Mishnah had said that you have the Roitzchim over there in the Ore Miklat, and they can leave the Ir Miklat when the Kohen Gadol dies. So therefore, we said that the mothers of the Kohenim Gadolim would supply food and clothes, L'fichach M'sein Shakohenim V'chola, would supply food and clothes to the Roitzchim in order that they shouldn't daven, that their son, the Kohen Gadol, should die. So the question is, time of delay matters, the Gemara says. So what does that imply? As long as the Roitzchim don't daven for the Kohen Gadol to die, then he won't die. Which implies if they would daven for him to die, then he would die. Why? Why should the Kohen Gadol deserve to die because the Roitzchim are davening for his death? Don't you have a pasuk that says, Kitzipur Lonud, like a bird that wanders around, Kadror Lof, like a dror, which is a specific type of bird that flies, came kill us chinim lo sava. So a klala for nothing won't come true, won't have any effect. So these guys, on the face of it, are cursing out the Kohen Gadol and want him to die for no reason. He didn't do anything wrong to them, on the face of it. Why should their klala have any effect, such that the mother of the Kohen Gadol has to be so worried about it and supply them with food and clothes?
And isn't it, they have a well, somebody curses somebody and comes back to him?
Right, So a certain old person, and there's some portion that say that when the Gemara says Ha'usava, most of the time that means Eliyahu Hanavi, it could be over here also. Anyway, Mepirka de Rava Shmieli, he says, I heard the following in Rava's Shir. The reason is because it's not totally a kilas chinam. There is a reason that the Kohen Gadol is held responsible. Because the Kohen Gadol should have davened for rachamim for that generation, that no such thing should happen in his time, that a person should kill accidentally. If he did, then we're talking about specifically his tefillah in the Kodesh Kodashim, then the Eibishter would have accepted it, and therefore, in other words, so if he didn't, or he's not on the level that his tefillah should be accepted or whatever, then to that extent he is held responsible. And the point is, therefore, if the Rotzchim would daven that he should die, then that it's not totally a kilas chinam. It has a reason. It has a reason to be chal.
In the Bayis Sheni, they got a lot of
What do you mean by absolutely? Okay, they have obviously terrible, whatever. Yeah. Okay.
Depends
right.
on the schus of the Kohen Gadol also.
Maybe. Okay. The Ikka de Masni, then there's another version. The version that we have in our Mishnah is that they give food and clothes to the Roitzchim, so they shouldn't daven that they should die. In other words, implying, you have to consider, there's three possibilities, right? You could have the Roitzchim daven for the Kohen Gadol to die. We're saying that they try to avoid that, that the mothers give them food and clothes so they don't do that. On the face of it, though, the Mishnah is implying, and if the Roitzchim don't do anything, they don't daven he should die, they just don't daven about him at all, and they don't daven that he should live, then there's no particular reason for him to die. So all it is in other words, the concern is they might daven for him to die, and therefore we try to forestall that, but implying if they just therefore don't daven regarding the Kohen Gadol at all, fine, he'll still be alive. Now, there's a different version, V'ikka d'masni, another version of it went, Kadeshi yispalu abneim shalo yamusu. That fakir, the mother of the Kohen Gadol is bringing them food and clothes so that they should davka die, that they should davka daven for their son, the Kohen Gadol, that he should not die, which implies the other way around, time of demaklu, only if they specifically daven that he shouldn't die, only then will he stay alive. Ole maklu maisi, implying, according to the second version, if they were to do nothing, he would still be chayav to die. So the first version was saying only if they daven that he should actually die. And we said, okay, it's not totally a kilas chinam. But now the second version goes even further. They're not even davening anything about him at all. And yet, by default, he's going to die unless they specifically daven that he should live. The Rotzim, if they daven, if they don't daven about the Kohen Gadol at all, then
if the Rotzim daven, the mothers have to daven.
No, we're not talking. The mothers are supplying food and clothes. We're not talking about the mothers davening. What we're saying is, according to the first version, the way we have it printed in the Mishnah, is if the Roitzchim daven that the Kohen Gadol should die, then Taka, that won't be a kilas chinam because he should have davened that there should never be such a situation in the first place. Therefore, he can Taka be chayav misa. But if they don't daven about him at all, or they daven that he should live, fine, then he'll live. The second version is saying if they daven that he'll die, then he'll die. But even if they don't daven about him at all, he'll also die. The only way that he won't die is if they daven specifically that he should not die. And therefore, according to that second version, when the mother of the Kohen Gadol brings them food and clothing, it's not she's saying to them, please don't daven that my son died. Okay, she has to be telling them, please daven that my son should not die. Which is a stronger thing.
Well, I'll ask a question. Yeah. The reason why he killed, because he killed the person, the husband, the wife, the Rateach killed the Shogun.
Yeah.
Right, right?
Yeah, we're talking about Rateach the Shogun over here.
So in other words, he was partly responsible for it.
Who's responsible?
The right player.
Well, okay, so we said yesterday that sometimes...
Actually, it wasn't that he didn't... the coin didn't...
No, but the coin gadol should have davened.
He was responsible.
Okay, ultimately there's a certain degree of responsibility. That's why
right?
He has to go to the yirmikvah. But the coin gadol has a certain responsibility. He's obligated to daven on behalf of the people. So therefore, my havalei l'me'avad. So now we have to ask, according to the second version, what should the coin gadol have done differently? And so effectively what you're saying is the Ritzeach did something wrong and the Kohen Gadol is being punished for it. So they have expressions, the Gemara is going to bring expressions to express that idea that you have one person does wrong and a different person gets the consequences. And here in Bavel we use an expression for that. Tuvia chotav zigud mingud. Is it right that Tuvia does the Avera and Zigud gets the Malchus? This is basically, that's a name, Zigud, but whatever. The Gemara in Pesachim tells us a story, Rashi brings it over here, that one time, a guy named Zigud comes to the Papa's Beis Din with a report that Tuvia, another Yid, has done a certain Avera. And the Papa orders that Zigud should be given Malchus. And Zigud asks, what's going on? Tuvia did the Avera, and I, Zigud, should get the Malchus? And the Papa explains, yes, because you know in order to convict Tuvia for the Avera that he did, you would need two Eidim. You only one Eid, therefore it's not Eidus, it's Lashon Hara. You get Petch for Lashon Hara, therefore. So there, but that became a popular. The fact is that Lashon Hara by definition is true. Two is not Lashon Hara because you're doing it for a constructive purpose, in order that the guy should get his punishment and his kapara. But one aid, yeah. So it became a popular expression based on that story. Tuvia chotav zigud mingud. So like over here, what's the idea? The Ritzeach did something wrong, and therefore the Kohen Gadol is the one who should get punished. Or
it's interesting that the Lashon Hara is now commemorated for eternity.
No, I guess that's true. Hosamamri, over there in Eretz Yisrael, they have a different. Over there in Eretz Yisrael, they have a different expression to express the same idea. Shechem nosiv umagoy gozer. Is it right that Shechem is getting married? This is the story with Shechem and Dinah in Parashas Vayishlach. And Mabgoi should have to get a bris milah. Mabgoi is either the name of a. Rashi says it's the name of a person from the town, where we know that everybody in town had to get all the men in town had to get a bris milah. That was part of the deal. Or there's different explanation. Some of the Mephoshim say that Mabgoi, the Rabbi Chananel brings it over here, for example, that Mabgoi means a farmer. So like Shechem, the prince of the town, is getting married, and because of that, the poor farmer has to go and get a bris milah. Either way, it expresses the same idea. In other words, why is it that the Ritzeach did something wrong, and the Kohen Gadol is held responsible?
It got much worse.
And again, Omer Le'ahu Sava, and again, a certain old person said, the same answer, Mepirke de Rav Shmieli, I heard from Rav Shir, Shohel and Mavakash Rachim Madurin and Vladikru. Same idea, the Kohen Gadol should have davened for Rachamim for his generation, that such a thing should happen, and he did not, and therefore he's held responsible. And according to the second version, again, so responsible that even if the Ritzeach does not daven about him at all, by default, the Kohen Gadol should die.
Right.
The Ritzeach has to daven, should not die.
And Dasta the Ritzeach has to daven.
Right.
Not just his
That's
mother.
That's true.
Or his
right. Daughter. Well, the point is, in other words, the Ritzeach, in a way, Mephoshim talk about the Ritzeach tefillah about this, is more likely to be accepted
right.
in Hashemayim because he's doing it, he's really davening sincerely about it. It's more Lishma than anybody else's. Yeah, because he has. Yeah, he is negev adama, but that's just it. In other words, it's really from the depths of his heart.
Nevertheless,
it's interesting, actually.
When you're negev adama.
Yeah, because you're negev adama, it's from the depths of his heart. It really makes a... He has a schutz because he's a yid, and the point is, but no, just the fact that his tefillah is mukta deliver is from the depths of his heart because he really means it. I'll tell you, it's interesting. You know, in the Shirim Bahagodas Chazal that they have on the shelves in the next room, they mention over there, they relate this to something that the Sforner says at the end of this week's parasha. At the end of this week's parasha, it says that Lavan, after the whole showdown with Yaakov. Over there by Galad, you guys Sadus or whatever. The next morning, it says Lavan gets up, he blesses his sons and daughters and kisses them, meaning his daughters and his grandchildren, whatever. He kisses them and he leaves. So the Sforner says, what's the point? Why do we have to be told that Lavan gave them a bracha? And the point is, because first, Lavan was a lowlife and a rasha and a cheater and everything, but first, when he's giving a bracha to his daughters and his grandchildren, he really means it sincerely. And therefore, the pasuk finds reason to record it. Same idea over here. The Ritzeach, he may be a Ritzeach, but he's first. When he's davening that the Kohen Gadol should die and that he should get out of the Eir Mikvah, it really is sincere, and therefore, yes.
There's a difference. Lavan was his child.
True. Okay, but over here it's the Ritzeach. So get out of the Eir Mikvah. Okay. As it happened, as you have the case of a certain person, a lion ate him within 3 parasa of where Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi lived. And for the next 3 days, Elio did not come to talk with Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi because he was upset at him. How are you talking? You, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, the great tzaddik, are obligated to be davening on behalf of the people in your vicinity that such a thing should not happen. You didn't, therefore you're held responsible. Same idea.
That's what happens when he missed mincha that day with the minyan.
Amar of Yehoda Amar Rav, kill us chacham afilu b'chinam hi ba.
Are we saying it's just a Kohen Gadol or every yid has to daven the
Tavon? To a certain extent. No, primarily we're talking about the Kohen Gadol, who is the leader of the generation, and the same thing with Rishon and Levi, that they have more of a responsibility. Their responsibility is to daven that no such things should happen.
Well, it's not just that.
Amar of Yehoda Amar Rav, kill us chacham afilu b'chinam hi ba. When a chacham gives a klala, even if it's for no reason, it still comes true. And that's the connection with the previous thing. This Ritzeach B'Shogeg may, in fact, be a Tamat Chacham. Then you have extra reason to be concerned about his kala. Minolon me'achitofel. Where do we know this from the story of David and Achitofel? Like this. Shebashar shakara David shisim. When David was digging the foundations of the Beis Mikdash, Kofa Tehoima, the Tehoim, the underground water, the abyss, started welling up. Welling up from underground, surging up. Balaam mishtafala alma was going to flood the whole world. Rashi brings from a Yerushalmi that what happened was as David is digging these foundations, he comes across he finds a little piece of earthenware there. Well, he figures, okay, I need to remove it. I'm not busy digging over here. The piece of earthenware starts telling him basically, I'm the plug that's keeping all the water back. Don't take me out. If you do, then there's going to be a flood. And he doesn't listen, and he pulls the plug, and all of a sudden, all the water is surging out.
Why he didn't listen?
Why didn't listen? Because he figured he's doing a mitzvah. He's digging the foundations of the Beis Mikdash.
Why did he dig?
Because he was digging the foundations of the Beis Mikdash. Rashi, by the way, points out an interesting chronological issue over here. We're saying that Achitofel was involved over here. Achitofel was only his enemy at the end of his life. But Achitofel died, or actually committed suicide, or whatever, during the rebellion of Avshalom, which was a few years before David passed away. When did David go and discover the place, Gur and Arad Nahayivusi, and build him his Beach over there? It's at the very end of his life, in the last year of his kingdom. By that time, Arad Nahayivusi is a Yivusi, a Goy who lived over there in Yerushalayim, where David bought his granary and set up a Mizbeach over there, and that was the site of the Beis Mikdash. So that was 3 years after Achitofel was dead. How is Achitofel involved over here? So Rashi says, no, what happened was many years earlier already, David knew, based on his research with Shmuel, where the Beis Mikdash is going to be.
He didn't build it yet
because Abisha told him not to, but he's preparing for it as much as possible. Therefore, even before he had a chance to buy the entire property from Aravna, he got permission from him to start digging over there in order to prepare the foundations. Eventually, in the last year of his reign, when there was a plague going on over there, then he actually bought the place and set up a mizbeach and brought korban.
Aravna, he was what?
Aravna was a pastor. He was a guy who lived over there.
From the Seven Nations?
Yeah, from the Yevusim. The Yevusim could be from one of the Seven Nations, could be from the descendants of the Plishtim, whatever it is, anyway. Okay. Omar, so now David says, Ma'u lichtiv shema chaspa, can we write the name of Hashem on a piece of earthenware, umishtiv tohoima, and throw it into the depth, deleiku aduchte, that the water should subside and go back to its natural, to its proper level. Can we do that? It's going to cause that the Abish's name is going to be erased. Are you allowed to do such a thing? Nobody was saying anything. Omar, so David says, anybody who knows the answer to this question does not say an answer, it deserves to be strangled by the neck. So that's his clause. well, what happened? Yeah. At that point, Achitophel figured out a Kavachomer. Omar, he thinks to himself, to make peace between a man and his wife, the Torah says to take the Eibishter's name, which is written with Kedusha, and erase it for a Sota. How much more so to save the whole world? Yeah. So on that basis, Achitophel tells him it's Mutter. The first one talk about what was the Havam and what was the question in the first place with Joicha Kola Torah Kola for Pekuach Nefesh. So they give a lot of different reasons, including maybe it has to do with the fact David himself was at fault, because we just said before he pulled the plug, so therefore maybe he wasn't sure whether he's allowed to undo it. There's also the Aruch Haner talks about it may be an issue of Chilul Hashem, maybe that's more serious and you can't do it. And Achitophel proves from the case that it's not a Chilul Hashem, whatever, there's a lot of different answers. No, but there was a valid Kavachomer evidently. So he tells what? No, it wasn't necessarily the same plug. Perhaps because it was a different one, but whatever. Yeah.
Well, why didn't he put the same plug back?
I guess because
you ever unplug something and you can't get it back.
Yeah. Okay, new, come on. Come on, new. Maybe it was the same piece of earthenware. Maybe I had to write the name Hashem on it over. Cost of Shem Achas. So, sure enough, David wrote a piece of the name of Hashem on the earthenware. Shodi Atahoma, and he threw it into the deck. Nochas V'kama Duchte, and sure enough, the water subsided and went back to its natural level. Actually, the Gemara in Sukkah was...
He
wrote a name of Hashem. The Gemara in Sukkah goes into a little more detail that actually the water went down too far, and the David had to say the Shir HaMalos to bring it back to a proper level that'll work for agriculture. Anyway, the point is, so David had given a klala over here that anybody who doesn't know this, anybody who doesn't say the answer to this, Yechonik would grind, right? So it was a killer chinam, because for one thing, Achitophel himself didn't know the answer at the time, and he did say it after all. Nevertheless, it says later on, Achitophel saw during Avshalom's rebellion that his advice wasn't going to be followed, and therefore he realized the rebellion is going to fail, and he's going to be considered a murder malchus. So he saddled up his donkey. He got up and went to his house, to his city. He gave last instructions to his family. And he strangled himself. So we see that David's klala came true. That's an example of a killas chacham that came true even though it was al-chinam.
He didn't know.
So that's the thing. That's what we're saying. Even though it's al-chinam, nevertheless, still
he
found
it
small.
He said it 1 second faster.
Now that's not fair.
No, so you actually do have Mephoshim that say it wasn't totally b'chinam, because for one thing, based on a medrash, that actually Achitophel at first didn't want to say it, not because he didn't know, but because he figured, you know what, fine, let David drown, I'll take over the kingship. Or we were Matthias David by not saying right away, whatever, there's different explanations. Yeah. Okay.
So it's basically
al-chinam, but still, yeah.
Who says that?
A different Mephoshim talk about, I don't remember exactly. Okay. Amar Rav Abba, Kilas Chacham Afil Al Tnai Ibo. Here's another thing. A klola of a Chacham, even if it was based on a Tnai, and even if the Tnai was actually fulfilled, nevertheless, the klola has an effect.
The Tnai was not fulfilled.
No, in other words, he says that if such and such is not done, then this klola will happen. This thing is done. Nevertheless, the klola still has an effect. So according to Rashi, it basically comes out that Kilas, when we said before, Kilas Chinam and Kilas Al-Tnai, basically kind of come down to the same thing. This is going to give another example of it. Other proportions talk about different nuances. There's a difference over here. Here, after all, Achitophel didn't know the answer to begin with, therefore it's more of a Kilas Chinam, whereas over here in this next case, we're going to talk about Shmuel knew the answer to begin with. Okay. Menolon Mishmuel, Menolon Me'eli. Where do we see this? We see this from the story of Eli. Eli had his sons Chofni and Pinchas were not acting correctly. So the Eibishter sends, so they're doing different things. We learned about when women brought korbanos, they didn't bring them right away. They delay things. When other people are bringing bigger korbanos, they grab from the meat before the chaylev, before the blood was sprinkled and the chaylev was offered on the mizbeach. They were throwing him, whatever. Anyway, so Hashem sends Shmuel with his very first nevuah, actually. Hashem tells Shmuel his very first nevuah that Eli's family are going to be severely punished for this. The next morning, when they get up, Shmuel doesn't want to tell this to Eli. He's afraid to. And Ka'amala Eli l'Shmuel, so Eli says to Shmuel, Ko yasal achoy l'kim b'choy yosef, so should Hashem do to you, and so he should increase. Im t'chachem imeni dover, if you hide the matter from me. In other words, this, I have a poronos already that my sons are acting improperly. That kind of punishment, and even more, should happen to you if you don't tell me. And he says to him, even though it says, okay, so Shmuel told him everything that he had been told, he didn't hide anything. Nevertheless, many years later, it says about Shmuel's own children, that his own children did not follow in his ways. So in other words, Eli's
follow.
No, no, this is, we're talking about Shmuel. The klala was fulfilled on Shmuel,
what?
That his children acted improperly, okay. The same as Eli's children did, even though he actually did tell Eli what he was supposed to. His own children. No, we're talking about Shmuel's children.
Who was their name?
Their names, what were their names? Yoel and Avia, the Pasuk says.
What did they do?
Whatever, so the Pasuk says that the Pasuk says on them, harsh things, that the Vayitchu Shoychad, that they took Shoychad, Vayitchu Mishpat, that they perverted justice. The Gemara and Shabbos explains actually it wasn't quite as bad as all that. What it means is, for one thing, Shmuel used to travel all over Eretz Yisrael to judge the people and teach them Torah. They didn't. They stayed in their place and made everybody come to them. They demanded Matnas Leviyah. They demanded their Meiser verbally instead of waiting for people to bring it to them. Whatever, different things like that. So it wasn't passive.
So
it wasn't.
Did have an effect.
So that's the thing. So Eli's klala had an effect, even though Shmuel did actually tell him. Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav Nidui Al Tnai Tzarech Hafara. In the same vein, if you make a nidu, you put somebody in nidu, your cherem or whatever, even though it's Al Tnai Tzarech Hafara, nevertheless, it still needs Hafara. The nidu you still have to do Atoras Nedarim. Menolan Mi Yehuda. Where do we see this from the story of Yehuda? You have the passage where Yehuda says, don't be afraid to send Binyamin with me to Mitzrayim. If I don't bring him back to you and then make him and stand him up in front of you, then I will have sinned to my father, meaning Yaakov, for all eternity, meaning that he's putting himself in a nidui al tanai. And what happened? That nidui had an effect. Because Rav Shmuel ben Nachmani says in the name of Rav Yenison, what does it mean in Moshe's brachas to the Jewish people in Parshas Vezeza bracha? First, there's the bracha to Reuben. Let Reuben live and not die. And then the next one is Vezois Yehuda, and this is to Yehuda. So first of all, why is Yehuda right after Reuben? What happened to Shimon and Levi? And second of all, why did Yehuda's bracha begin with Vezois? What does that mean? It means Kol Oisen Shana Shoyis Kol Oisen Mem Shana Shohoi Yisrael Bamid. It means throughout the 40 years that the Jewish people were in the desert, Atzmois of Shoyehuda Hayim Gugolin Ba'arin. Yehuda's bones are rolling around in their coffin. All of the bodies, the bones of all the Shvatim were taken out of Mitzrayim, not just Yosef, but Yehuda's body has no rest, even in its aron, in its coffin, throughout all those years. His bones are rolling around because he's still a nidui. He's still this nidui that he took on himself still has an effect.
After
Misa, and it represented the idea that, as we're going to say, that his neshama in Gan Eden had no rest either. Yeah. What do you mean? He passed away. We're talking about he lived 120 whatever years, and that's what? Yeah, his bones are in an orange. He carried them still. No, all of the Shvatim were temporarily buried in Mitzrayim, but eventually, just like they took out Yosef's bones, just like we know that Moshe took out Yosef's bones, as it says in Parshas Bishalach, so all the other Shvatim took the bones of each of their ancestors and brought them with them, and eventually they buried them in their own.
Yosef was a hard part.
Yeah.
Inside
the Aron, the bones are rolling around and not finding any. Ad Sha'omad Moshe, because Shalom Rachamim, until Moshe gets up and then davens for Rachamim for him. Namely, so what's the connection with Reuben? Omelofonav, he says to the Abishta, Me Goram Reuben Shayoida, who after all brought it about that Reuben should publicly admit to his Avera of moving Yaakov's bed? That was Yehuda. When Yehuda publicly admitted after the story of Tamar, Sadka Mimeni, she's right, it's because of me that this whole thing developed. Then that was the first time. Up until then, Tosfos says Reuben had been doing Tshuva also, but he'd been doing Tshuva privately. After this, once Yehuda got up and admitted that what had happened with Tamar, then Reuben says, you know what? While people are admitting, let me also admit what I did with moving my father's bed out of Bilhah's tent. So Yehuda caused Reuben to do public Tshuva. That's a very important thing. So therefore, Vezois Yehuda, is this right? That is this how it should be for Yehuda, that he should be rolling around and not finding any menucha because of the nidui? Yeah. Shema Hashem kill Yehuda. Hashem listened to the voice of Yehuda. So all Avery the Shafa. That caused now that Yehuda's bones now move back into their proper places. His skeleton gets reassembled. However, loy havakam ailah le mesivta derukia. However, still Yehuda was not being readmitted into the mesivta derukia, into the yeshiva shalmaila. So therefore, Moshe had to continue, but with the words ve'el amay tibienu, bring him to his people. His people, meaning his fellow tamar chachamim in the Beis Medrash. Loy havakal yadu le mishkal le mitrach b'shmaita b'hadir rabbanon. However, then Yehuda is still sitting over there, not knowing enough to be able to be able to do shakla v'talia with the other chachamim. Therefore, Moshe has to continue davening with the words, Yodav Rav Loi, let his hands be able to fight on his behalf. Let him have the power to be able to argue in the give and take of Torah with the other neshamas there. Loi have a Yodav LaParukik Kusha. Okay, so at that point, Yehuda's neshama is able to join in the discussions, but he's not able to answer the questions. He's not able to answer the questions. And we learned this in Bava Kamma as well. In Bava Kamma, the Gemara says it a little bit differently. He wasn't able to do, as the famous expression, La Tzukah Shmaitza Liber Dehilchta, to say statements that would be valid Alpi Alofa, which, as we learned in Sanhedrin, requires special Tiyatza Deshmaya. So for that,
a lot of people couldn't get that.
Okay, but Moshe wanted that Yehuda should have that mile also. Therefore, he finishes off the words, "Ve'ezer mitzarav tia," be a help to him from his opponents, meaning that he should have the ability to actually come to a proper conclusion.
He says that too.
But this is all part of the bracha to Yehuda. Shema Hashem to Yehuda ve'alame to v'yenu, Yodav Rav Loi ve'ezer mitzarav tia. So that's these four expressions. You know, these five expressions that he uses about Yehuda. Shema Hashem to Yehuda ve'alame. Four expressions.
That?
Moshe's bracha, and Moshe's v'zeh's bracha. Shema Hashem kol Yehuda, ve'el amet tibienu, Yodav Rav Loi, ve'ezim mitzarav tia. Each of them accomplished something else in Yehuda's rehabilitation. So therefore, so we see that Yehuda's nidui al tnai still had an effect. Now, why should it? So Tosfos, first of all, points out over here there is actually a difference. That when Yehuda, not necessarily Tosfos says, is this a blanket statement when you make a nidui al tnai? Because it depends, does the person have 100% the ability to do whatever it is? If he does, then you don't need Afara for it. Let him do the thing, and then you do his Nevachal. Over here, the point is, what Yehuda was saying is not necessarily something that's 100% in his power. He's saying he's going to bring Binyamin back alive. Fine, what happens, for example, if they get attacked by, what happens if Yosef decides to keep him? What happens if they get attacked on the way or whatever? So it's not totally in Yehuda's control, and therefore he shouldn't have put himself under such a condition in the first place.
By making such a promise,
yeah. With that said, and there are a couple of other Rishonim talk about that, therefore, if you do make a Nidu Yal Tanai, you should also add the positive thing. If you don't do such and such, then the nidui will be chal. But if you do it, the nidui will not be chal, and therefore you're covering all your bases. Basically. In fact, there is also, it's interesting. You have the concept of tnai b'nei God b'nei Reuven, a double tnai. But also, I was going to say, there's an interesting the Tosfos Yom Tov, a few years after Gzeiras Tachatat, composed the Misha Berach. He held that the cause of Gzeiras Tachatat was that people were talking in shul, and so he composed the Misha Berach to bench the people who do not talk in shul. Implicitly, then, the idea is that people who do talk in shul ought to be in nidui. But he didn't want to phrase that in so many words because of what our Gemara is saying over here about a nidui al tanai, and therefore better just be said in the positive. Misha Berach, Avisena, Avram, and Yaakov, who you vote as people who do not talk in shul during davening. And the Mikal Hain after Shemei Alav. Yeah, in other words, without mentioning the concept of a nidui at all. Yeah. On the other hand, I should mention that a couple of Meporshim talk about that maybe, in fact, Yehuda did not fulfill it tonight. Some of the Ritva, for example, talks about maybe indeed, who says that necessarily Binyamin left with the other brothers to go back to Eretz Israel? Maybe Taka Yosef kept Binyamin with him in Mitzrayim, not as a slave, of course, because he revealed himself, but nevertheless, he didn't want to part from him. The rest of the brothers went back home, told Yaakov what's going on. They all came down to Mitzrayim. So sure, Yaakov and Binyamin eventually see each other, but Yehuda never brought Binyamin back to Yaakov. That's one explanation.
At least we don't know if he did.
No, but the point is, Yehuda is saying that I don't bring him back to you. No, but it doesn't matter. Okay, understood. But still, Yehuda is saying, I will bring him back to you. And according to that way of looking at it, he didn't bring him back to him. The Roger Trevor says yet another thing about it. Maybe indeed, fine, Binyamin did travel with them. But it's not Yehuda bringing him back as if like he's a little kid that he tells. Binyamin is going on his own. Sure, he shows up at the house together with the rest of them, but it's not Yehuda brought him back. It's he came back on his own, the same way as the rest of them came back on their own. Therefore, instead, you could still say that Yehuda didn't fully fulfill his tonight.
Still.
Yeah. And that's what we're saying. That's why why it took all that time until Moshe had to daven on his behalf.
But he made sure that you and Binyamin would come back.
Fair enough, but he still didn't necessarily literally fulfill his condition.
He promised that he would bring him back.
That he would bring him back.
That was
the
promise.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Okay. All right. Now, we said in the Mishnah that we said there's three types of Kohen Gadol according to the Tanakhama and four according to the Yehuda, that if any of them dies, the Ritzeach can leave the Ard Me'ir. So, Yiboyelah, B'misas Kulon Huchoyzer, or Dilma B'misas Echad Mehen. Do we say that all of them have to die in order for him to return, or only some of them? Meaning, you could have, for example, so we talked about, let's say, in the Mishnah we had, you could have a Kohen She'ovar, you can have a Kohen Gadol was temporarily disqualified, so they had a substitute. Eventually, the Kohen Gadol recovers or becomes Tahor or what have you, and then the other one leaves the temporary position that he had. So now, at that point, you have two of the types of Kohen Gadol alive. Does it have to be that both of them die in order for the Ritzeach to leave the Yom Mikvah, or one or the other?
Seems to be more one.
Well, that's the question. No, on the face of it, the Mishnah doesn't. What? The real Kohen Gadol is the one who was originally and now has resumed his position. But nevertheless, you could still argue that maybe you need all the types of Kohen Gadol who exist at the time. Tashma, well, let's prove from the next Mishnah. Well, no, it could. If first one of them died, a few years later the other one dies, and then yeah. Tashma, come, we can prove from the next Mishnah, which has Nigma Din and Beloi Kohen Gadol. We said that if the Gmar Din of the Ritzeach happened when there was no Kohen Gadol in office, then we said we say in the Mishnah any yotzim sham la'olam. Then the Ritzeach never leaves the Yom. What? Now the Im Issa, if you it can happen. One Kohen Gadol died and they haven't gotten around to appointing another one yet. The Im Issa, now if you're going to tell me that he can leave when one or another type dies, lehadabei b'dahanach, then fine. Okay, so right now the Kohen Gadol died, but you still have, let's say, there's still alive a Kohen She'avar or a Kohen Merubah B'Gadim or whatever. Why can't we? What do we mean? He never leaves the Yom. All he has to do is wait till one of the other kinds die. The answer is B'dilekta, fine, but the Mishnah can be talking about a case where there is no other one. There was no case where this Kohen Gadol was disqualified and had to be temporarily replaced. There's no at the same time over here, no Kohen Mashuach and Kohen Merubah B'Gadim or whatever. So therefore, practically speaking, there's nobody. But doesn't necessarily mean that if there were, let's say, two people alive who at one time or another had served as Kohen Gadolim, if one of them is out of office now, but the other one is still alive, that he taka shouldn't leave the Ir Mikvah. We don't know that. The halacha is taka like that if any one of them dies, then he leaves the Ir Mikvah. All you need is any one of the three types of Kohen Gadol mentioned in the Mishnah.
Who's the halacha?
The Rambam? Yeah. These halachas are only in the Rambam because they're not Shulchan Aruch, because they're not in the game nowadays. Okay. So the Mishnah says, Mishnah Nigma Dine Mes Kohen Gadol, what happens? The Ritzeach killed B'Shogeg. We said he goes to the Ir Mikvah, and they bring him from there for the trial. Now what happens? They did the trial, they did the Gmar Din, and decided that indeed he needs to go to the Ir Mikvah. At that point, Mes Kohen Gadol. Now at that point, the Kohen Gadol dies. Hareza Eina Gola, in that case, he does not go into Golos at all. He's Potter from Golos at that point.
So the Gmar Din was...
The Gmar Din happened, the Gmar Din happened on Sunday. On Monday, the Kohen Gadol died. That's it. He doesn't have to go to the Ir Mikvah.
So we're not saying that Martin the Goyal Dom.
And the Goyal Dom can't get it. Yeah.
He didn't even go for that vote.
Yeah, exactly.
He didn't even go for that.
Yeah, he got the free pass.
Get out of jail.
Im Adshal Enigma Dine Mes Kohen Gadol. On the other hand, if it was the other way around, what if the Kohen Gadol died Sunday and the Gemara Din was Monday? Uminu Achar Tachdav. And so actually, let's figure it like this then. The Kohen Gadol died Sunday. Uminu achat tachtav, and then they appointed another one on Monday. Ul acham mikain nigma din, and then on Tuesday they did the gmar din. Then chodu misasa shoshen. Now he has to wait until the new Kohen Gadol, who was appointed on Monday, till that Kohen Gadol dies before he. It's not so obvious. We'll see in the Gemara.
What's the alternative?
The alternative would be to say that since the Ritzicha happened while the first Kohen Gadol was alive and in office, then maybe he should go free as once that one died.
The same Kohen Gadol was during the time of the Ritzicha.
Yeah.
What was the
Psach? That's what we're saying. The Psach was on Tuesday. What we're saying, the Ritzicha, okay. The Ritzicha happened last week. The Ritzicha happened last week. The Kohen Gadol was under Kohen Gadol number one. Now, under Kohen Gadol Reuven. Now, meanwhile, the next week, Sunday, Kohen Gadol Reuven dies. Monday, they appoint Kohen Gadol Shimon. Tuesday, they get around to doing the Gemara Din and decide that he has to go to the Yom Kippur. We're saying the halacha is we don't say, well, because the Ritzicha happened while Kohen Gadol Reuven was alive, and that's it. He's parted from going to the Yom Kippur. No, now we have to wait until Kohen Gadol Shimon dies.
There has to be one Kohen Gadol.
Because the Gemara Din happened after the first one passed away, and the second one was appointed, right? Nigma Din and Beloy Kohen Gadol. What happens if the Gemara Din took place when there is no Kohen Gadol in office? So then it was Sunday. No, Sunday the Kohen Gadol died. Monday they did the Gemara Din. Tuesday they appointed the new Kohen Gadol. Or Vahur, no, because the Inui Adin, you don't delay things. No, but okay. Vahurid Kohen Gadol, or somebody who kills the actual Kohen Gadol himself, or the Kohen Gadol Shaharag, or a third possibility, a Kohen Gadol who kills somebody. In all those cases, any Yotzei Misham La'olam, he never leaves the Ir Mikvah.
He almost got lucky.
The Ena,
if
the Gemara Din happened when there was no Kohen Gadol in office, or he killed the actual Kohen Gadol, or Kohen Gadol was himself a Ratzeach B'Shogeg. If a person kills the Kohen Gadol,
he's going up a ladder,
he falls down on the Kohen Gadol and kills him. Yeah.
Do not go up a ladder on top of the Kohen Gadol.
What? Whoa. It's too much crosstalk here. What? This is a Ratzeach B'Shogeg. The Kohen Gadol, the Kohen Gadol is Goyal Adah. Now, when a person, when a Ratzeach is in the Ir Mikvah, he does not leave for any reason, not even for an Eidus for a mitzvah, for example, Kiddush HaChodesh. Veloila edus mammon, not for edus on money. Veloila edus nefashis, not for edus of nefashis.
Oh, wow. He's still a kashal edus, sure.
But he doesn't leave there for any purpose. Va'afili Yisrael tzrichim, like, even if the Jewish people need him. Va'afili sar tzva Yisrael ki Yoyah ben Tzruya, even if he's a general of the whole Jewish people like Yoyah ben Tzruya. Einu yoytzei misham la'olam, he never leaves the Ir Mikvah. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Asher nas shama, as the pasuk says that he ran away there, and the shama teaches us sham tehe dirase, there he should live, sham tehe misase, that's where he dies, if the Kohen Gadol doesn't die before him, sham tehe kvurase, and that's where he gets buried. Now, a number of Mefarshim ask this question, why not? I mean, if the whole Jewish people need him, or it's a matter of pituach nefesh or whatever, why shouldn't he leave the Ir Mikvah?
Yeah.
So they give different reasons. One of them has to do with an idea that we've discussed before, that maybe a person is not obligated to put his own life in danger in order to save other people.
Even the whole Jewish people.
So the person is not necessarily obligated to put his own life in danger to save other people.
If you have a mitzvah,
but not necessarily if it's your own life at stake. Like this, his own life will be at stake because the Goel Adam can come after him. They also talk about an idea that maybe what it is because he's a Ratzeach B'Shogeg, because after all he did such a serious avera, maybe therefore you're saying that the whole Jewish people need him in order to save them in war or whatever, the Eivishter is not going to cause that Hatzalah is going to happen through such a person.
Right.
The Eivishter will arrange other shluchim for it to happen. The Rebbe talks about a sikha in Chelek Lamed Ches, a very interesting idea. The Rebbe says a different reason behind it. The reason is because if he were to leave the Ir Mikvah, effectively at that point he's a dead man. Because the Goel Adam can come after him. You can't say that a person has a mitzvah to leave an Ir Mikvah for some reason or other when he's a dead man. You can't give a mitzvah. The mitzvahs don't apply to dead people.
Right.
Therefore, by definition, he doesn't leave the Ir Mikvah because as soon as he leaves the Ir Mikvah, he's a dead person. He's called the Mikvah Mitzvah.
You can do Kasher Zoma also because they are dead men, right?
Well, no, it's a different. Well, if we were to leave, it can't be an age. I guess that's true. Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Ben made a good point. Yeah. If you were to go be an Eidus, then it wouldn't be valid Eidus anyway because you couldn't do to him Kasher Zomam because he's already effectively a dead man. Yeah. Similar to what we talked about before Eidus involving a Treif or whatever. Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Okay. Continues the Mishnah. Kashem shah ir kerletes katzchum kerlet. Just as the city saves the Ritzeach. If he's within the city itself, so also the tchum around it, the tchum Shabbos around it is also kohen. Ritzeach sheyotzeh chutz l'tchum. Now, what happens if the ritzeach leaves the tchum or motzeh goel adam and the goel adam meets up with him? What happens? Rabbi Yosi Aglili omer mitzvah biad goel adam or reshus biad kol adam. Rabbi Yosi Aglili says it's a mitzvah for the goel adam to kill him, but also it's not just the goel adam. Anybody else optionally could kill him. When it says ein loy dam means that even if somebody else, not the goel adam, kills him, then that's it. They're potter. Rabbi Akiva says even the Goel Adam doesn't have to kill him. He could if he wants to. He's not obligated to. If anybody else kills him, they will be chayav for him. They will be chayav misa. There's a different girsa that's brought over here. Agoyis Agro brings. It brings over here on the side over here, and I go to see your name. That a couple of them are Farshim, the Tosfos Yomtov among others, have a girsa in Chayav and Olav. That even though Rabbi Akiva is saying that the Goel Adam is not obligated to kill him, could if he wants to, he doesn't have to. Anybody else, if they kill him, will not be Chayav. In other words, according to that girsa, basically Rabbi Akiva is saying when it comes to Kol Adam, it's basically similar to what Rabbi Yitzchak Lewi is saying, that the in Chayav and Olav, and they have the reshus to do it. The machloikas would be, according to that girsa, would be specifically about the Goel Adam. Does the Goel Adam have a mitzvah to kill him, or only reshus? Which we'll discuss that further. We'll discuss that further in the Gemara, either today or tomorrow, depending whether we get to it. Okay, so the Gemara asks, my time. What's the reason for the first din that we said in the Mishnah that if the Kohen Gadol died after the Gemara din, he does not go to the Orem Mikvah? I'm going to buy a kavachomer. That buyer says, I can give you a kavachomer. Uma mishagola kvar yotza, yetze achshav, madach, somebody who already went into golos, goes free now when the Kohen Gadol dies. Mishala golos, somebody who never went into golos yet, ain't a din shala yigla. How much more so he shouldn't have to go into golos now that the Kohen Gadol died? Okay, the Gemara asks, why, how is that a kavachomer? But dilma hai de gola ichperle, maybe only when he's gone into golos has he already had the kapara happen to him. Hai de la gola loy, whereas if he hasn't gone into golos, he did not yet have the kapara. Maybe he still needs that kapara. The Gemara says, midi golos kamachapra. After all, is it really the golos that provides the kapara anyway? Misses Kohen or the machapra, really, it's the misser of the Kohen Gadol. That's the essential kapara. In other words, according to that way of looking at it, on the face of it, what the Gemara is saying, the Ir Mikla is just for the purpose of saving him from the Goel Adam. The real Kapara happens when the Kohen Gadol dies. Tosfos points out that actually at the beginning of the Masechta, we said, we use the expression Kapara, we talk about Edim Zomin, that we said that they shouldn't get that kind of Kapara, etc. So we see that the Golos itself is a certain kind of Kapara. But here, Tosfos says Kapara over here means pattering him from Golos. The death of the Kohen Gadol patters him from Golos. That's the kapara we mean over here.
We're still not sure why.
In other words, kapara of our Gemara means, the question is, midi Golos kamachapra, is it Golos that exempts him from Golos? No, Mrs. Kohen or the machapra, the Mr. of the Kohen exempts him from Golos. And therefore, in other words, it's logical that as long as it happened after Gemara Din, Tosfos and the previous Tosfos over here, Amar Abaya, they point out the Kavachomer still requires it has to have already been decided that he has to go to the Ir Mikla.
Right.
Otherwise, you don't apply the Kavachomer to the second case of the Mishnah where the Gemara Din happened after the Kohen Gadol died. Because then at the time when the Kohen Gadol died, he wasn't yet in line to be going into Golos.
Right.
Only once he was high of Golos can we say that now the Misa of the Kohen Gadol cancels that out. Yeah. There is, by the way, an idea that some of the Mephoshim say, I don't remember which ones, but some of the Mephoshim on the Pasuk, I think, that one reason we talked about yesterday, some reasons why Taka, the death of the Kohen Gadol, should be the trigger that gets the Ratzeah out of the Ir Mikvah. There's an interesting idea that some of the Mephoshim say that the vote is this way. Like this, you could have. We know that the person goes to the Ir Mikvah only if he was a Ratzeah for Shogig.
Right.
But we also know there can be many different levels of Shogig. Some of them, we said, are the kind he doesn't go to the Ir Mikvah b'chlal. But even within the kind of Shogig that you go to Ir Mikvah, we know there can be many different variations, many different gradations,
right,
in how the person is thinking, how shogig or how korav amazed or whatever it really was. No. Drunk was a different thing. If he wasn't the shechurus shaloit, then the pashtus he'd still be responsible. If anything, maybe he's more responsible, like a drunk driver. And if he's a gear the shechurus shaloit, then he's potter from all mitzvahs anyway. No, that's hold up. I don't think drunk would factor in, but you could still have in a person's mentality. You can have there can be how much shogig he was, how much care he could have taken or should have taken or whatever. So therefore, what the Eibush does is he makes it that it depends on the death of the Kohen Gadol. Meaning, so you can have one person who goes to the Imiklot and he's there for a day, or even like an our mission, he doesn't go there at all because the Kohen Gadol dies after the Gemara Din. Or you can have the guy could be there for 50 years. This way, it all depends. Hashem works it out based on how he, based on how Hashem knows what the person was really thinking and how much kapara he needs. It might be Rabbeinu Bechaya, but I don't remember. Okay. Okay, then we said Iman Shel Enigma Din Bechula. Then we said in the Mishnah that we had another case where the Gemar Din happened after the Kohen Gadol died and a new one was appointed, where then we said that the he only goes free when the new Kohen Gadol dies. The Manan Emili, where do we know this from? Amar Kahana de Amar Krah, that he goes free only when the second, when the new Kohen Gadol dies. Yeah. Why? Amar Kahana de Amar Krah, because the Pasuk says, the Yoshavad Moisa Kohen Gadol Asha Moshach Oisa B'Shem HaKodesh. The Pasuk says, he should live there in the Ir Mikvah until the death of the Kohen Gadol, whom he anointed with the Shemen HaMishnah. So what do you mean? Chihu Moshchei. The Retzach isn't the one who anointed the Kohen Gadol. Ela Zeshen Nimshach B'Yamav. It means this refers to the Kohen Gadol who was anointed in his time, meaning after he was Retzach, before the Gemar did. And that's what we're saying, therefore, that he...
Asi was Retzach?
Well, yeah, because that's the case we talked about in the Mishnah, that he was Retzach last week. The old Kohen Gadol died on Sunday. They appointed a new one on Monday, and the Gemar did was on Tuesday. That's what we said.
Right.
So therefore, that's what we're saying. Shenim shach b'yamav, that this Kohen Gadol was anointed in his time, meaning before the Gemar did. So the question is, in that case, my havelo lemevan. Now, we said on Amud Aleph, the Kohen Gadol is held responsible because he should have davened that such a thing shouldn't happen. But in this case, we're talking about the second Kohen Gadol. He wasn't even in office. He wasn't even in office at the time that this happened. What could he have done differently? Why are we holding him responsible and saying that when he dies, the Kohen Gadol, the Retzach goes free? And the answer is, because still, as the new Kohen Gadol, he could have davened that the Gemar Din should be l'schus, and he did not daven for that. Now, what does that mean? How he should daven that he should daven that the Dayanim should make a mistake? So one of the interesting explanations is we learned in Sanhedrin that if the Sanhedrin decides unanimously that a person is chayev, kulei chayev zaka. So therefore, what the Kohen Gadol should be davening for is that all of the Dayanim should realize the tact of the truth, that he is Chayev Golos, and all declare him Chayev Golos, and then because it's called Chayev, he'll be Potter, he'll be Zakai, so therefore that's what he should be davening for.
And for everyone.
And yes.
Every Retzach.
Yeah, for every Retzach. And since he didn't, then therefore he's held responsible. That's one of the answers, yeah. All right. Yeah. Naktinan, we know the Kabbalah, the following din, Nigma Diniomes, what happens if the Gemar Din took place,
right.
So now he has to go to the Imikvot, but then before he went to the Imikvot, he died. The
Naktinan means what again?
Naktinan means literally means we hold in our hands. In other words, we have a Kabbalah from our teachers. That if the Retzach died after the Gemar Din, before he could go to the Imikvot, Melichinas Hatzmois of Lasham, they bring his bones there, they bring his body there to be buried in the Imikvot.
Forever?
That's so. We're going to learn later on. We're going to learn later on that the family later on. Well, we're going to say later. We're going to say actually in a couple of lines that later on, eventually, the Retzach is reburied in with his family. The Minchas Chinuch actually discusses the issue. Are we saying over there, are we saying that they have to take him out of there because the Orei Mitzvot are not meant for burial, as the Gemara is going to talk about later, or does it mean they can if they want to, but they could also leave him buried there forever if they want? Yes. But anyway, the point is, he's already dead, but nevertheless, he still needs that kapara of being buried at least temporarily in the Orei Mitzvot.
So they don't
bury him
there first?
Later on, well, that's it. As the Pasuk says, Lashuv Lasheves Ba'aretz Ad Mois HaKohen, as the Pasuk says, to go return and dwell in the land until the Kohen Gadol dies. Ve'ezeru Yeshiva Shei Ba'aretz. What do you mean with dwelling in the land? Heveyem is a kura. That means burial. So he still needs, his body still needs to be, that'll be his kapara.
Yeshiva means kura.
Yeshiva, yes.
That's where we get it.
Yes. Because it says Ba'aretz, in the land, meaning in the earth. Tana, then we learn in a braisa. Mes kodim shemes kohen gadol. Now what happens? The guy dies in the Ir Mikvot before the Kohen Gadol ever dies. Melichin, that's most of our kibra avoysa. Then they can bring his bones to be buried with his ancestors. Shedichtiv, Yoshev haretzeach al eretz achuzase, because the Pasuk says the retzeach will return to the land, to the earth of his inheritance. Ezu yeshiva shib eretz achuzase. Again, what's a dwelling?
That's only for a shege.
Yeah, we're talking about Eretz Yisrael.
No, I know we are, but yeah. For Mazid, he would not.
For Mazid, he gets executed, and we learned in Sanhedrin, if he gets buried in one of the two plots that the Beis Din has set aside for the Haruge Beis Din, and eventually, after the flesh decays, and they collect the bones and rebury him with his family. What is a yeshiva that's in the earth of his achuzah? Have a emes kavura? This means very. So again, this is what I'm saying. The Minchas Chinuch talks about: Are we saying that they're allowed to take him, but if they want, they could leave him there, or are we saying they must take him because the Orim Mikot are not meant for burial? Okay, so he's not sure.
Most likely, he has to take him.
Could be. We don't know. We'll find out. We'll find out when Mashiach comes. I guess when we have the three more Orim Mikot that are set aside and Mashiach signs, then they'll have to clarify all these things.
How many Orim Mikot are we going to have?
Nine. Well, nine big ones, and then I guess however many small ones. I don't know.
We know there were any last
it. What?
We don't know where they are.
Where they are? We know where some of them are. We know where Chevra is, for example. We know where Shem is. What?
You call it the rough team in the past.
So you have different Meforshim on the Pasuk talk about different possibilities. Are we talking about to be Kolet Roitzchim that happened during all the years of Galus, or are we talking about during the first stage of Mashiach's times when you're still going to have Olam Tzminog and Noyeg, and it's still possible for people to die and be killed with Shogeg, etc.? Yeah. Okay. Now, how about another case? Nigma Dine V'nasa Kohen Ben Grusha Ben Chalotza. Okay, so we talked about in the Mishnah, we had the cases where the Gemara didn't happen before or after the old Kohen Gadol died. What happened in a different case? There was a Gemara Din, the guy has to go to the Orem Mikvah. Now it turns out that the Kohen Gadol was not after all a Kohen Gadol because he's Ben Grusha Ben Chalotza, he's a Cholot.
So there was no Kohen Gadol?
That's the question. Pligi Bar Rav Ami V'Rav Yitzchak Nachfa. So Rav Ami and Rav Yitzchak Nachfa argue what would be the Din in that case. One says in that case it's the equivalent of the Kohen Gadol dying, and in that case he can go free and not have to go to the Orem Mikvah. The other one says it's considered that the Kohuna is bottle. It turns out there was never a Kohen all this time, and therefore it would be the equivalent of the case we had in the Mishnah where the Gemara didn't happen when there was no Kohen Gadol in office. And then we said any Yotze Misham La'olam that he never leaves the Orem Mikvah.
It's more like that.
Well, that's the question. So the question is, the Gemara says, Lema b'plugta de Rabbi Eliezer v'Rabbi Shorcham b'Rifugi. Should we say that Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Yitzchak Nachfa are basically reiterating a machlokas between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua? Which we shouldn't say that. We shouldn't assume that Amiroyim are just re-arguing the same point that Tanoim already argued about. This now, namely, we learn in a Mishnah, Hoya Oymed Umakrib Agabi HaMizbeach. Suppose a Kohen is standing and bringing a korban on the Mizbeach. And it turns out, as he's doing that he's a Ben Grusha or Ben Chalotza, he's a Cholol after all. Rabbi Eliezer, I'm a Kol Korbanos Shehichir Psulin. Rabbi Eliezer says, at that point, it turns out, then all the Korbanos that he brought all this time are considered possible. But Rabbi Yeshua Machshir, whereas Rabbi Yeshua says it's Kosher.
Until it's known.
So, Manda Amar Mesa, Rabbi Yeshua. So, it sounds like the opinion among the Amiroyim, who says that Mesa, that therefore now the Retzeach is not going to have to go to the Orem Mikvah, or can be freed from it, whatever, is going according to Rabbi Yeshua. In other words, the same way as the Kohen who became a Cholol, we consider at that point as if he died. But up until that point, he was alive and able to bring Karbanos. Oman dama Botla ka Rabbi Eliezer. And the opinion that says Botla would be like Rabbi Eliezer. That is possible to begin with. The answer is no. It's not the same machlokes. Alibad Rabbi Eliezer kula amalei pligi. Within Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, it has to be nobody is arguing. Obviously, Rabbi Eliezer definitely holds that butler. Therefore, among the Amiroyim over here, among Rab Ami and Rabbi Yitzchak Nachfa, whichever one says Mesa cannot possibly be agreeing with Rabbi Eliezer. Keep pligi al libid Rabbi Yeshua. Their machloikas of the Amiroyim is within Rabbi Yeshua's opinion. Mandom Mesa could Rabbi Yeshua. The opinion that says that Mesa Kohuna in this case says the same thing as Rabbi Yeshua would say over there, he would say over here. Well, Manda Omer Botla, where is the opinion that says Botla, he would say that no, Rabbi Yeshua himself would make a distinction. Ad kan like Omer Rabbi Yeshua Hossam, the only reason why Rabbi Yeshua is saying over there that Mesa, that it's the equivalent of Mesa that we say that all the Korbanos he brought up to this point at Kosher, is because we have a special Pasuk, the Chtiv, because we have a Pasuk also from Moshe's Brachas to the Shvatim, for his Brachas to Levi, Borech Hashem Cheloi. Hashem blessed his cheloi, which cheloi, the simple meaning, means his wealth or his army or whatever, but we also darshan it meloshon cholol. Baruch Hashem cheloi, upoyol yodav tirtzeh, and accept the work of his hands, meaning afilu cholol and shaboy, meaning that Moshe is expressing the idea over here, that even the avodah of a cholol, but the eved is kosher, so Rabbi Yeshua is using that, because that's what we're saying over here, that even though he's a cholol, he's for a descendant of Aaron, and well, the Zot is true, but that's the point is that he didn't know, right? And in fact, they are supposed to investigate. Beis Din is supposed to investigate the learning condition before he ever does avodah. But the point is that we have this pasuk that teaches us that the avodah of a cholol v'di'eved is kosher. So therefore, based
on...
No, that is halacha.
That is
halacha.
Avodah of a cholol is kosher.
Not b'di'eved. Doesn't mean that now that he knows that he's a cholol, he can't do the avodah and it'll be kosher. But whatever he did up until this point, Rabbi Yeshua is saying will be kosher, and that's taka the halacha. So therefore... So in that case, Rabbi Yeshua will say that it was kosher up until now, and it only becomes possible from now on. But we're here when it comes to the Ritzayach, we have no such pasuk to express that idea after the Rabbi Yeshua Moedah. Even Rabbi Yeshua might agree that we would say Botla Kohuna, that it's considered as if there was no Kohen Gadol at the time, and therefore the guy is never going to leave the Yemen. And that is Taka the Halacha. Then we said in the Mishnah, Nigma Din, we said in the Mishnah that once the Gemar Din takes place and he goes to the Imikvot, he's never allowed to leave there until the Kohen Gadol dies. And we said even if the whole Jewish people meet him like Yoav, even if he's the general of the entire Jewish people like Yoav ben Tzruya. So since we're mentioning Yoav, the Gemara is going to talk about a little bit about what happened with Yoav at the end of his life. Now, we learned in Sanhedrin, we learned in some detail over there, we talk about the story of Yoav, why the various reasons that he was Chayav Mishta. He had killed, early in his career, he had killed Avner, who previously had been Shaul's general, and now went over to David's side, but Yoav killed him. Well, we learned over there that Yoav argued that he's a Goyal Adam because Avner had killed his brother Asael. So you have that. Later on, many years later, after the revolt of Absalom, during the revolt of Sheva ben Bichri, then there's another cousin of theirs named Amasa, who David had appointed as a new general, and Yoav killed him as well, with the reason, as we learned in the Gemara over there, because as David had told Amasa to gather together the army, and Amasa delayed in gathering them together. So Yoav killed him, arguing that he's a Murid B'Malchus, where the counter-argument was that Amasa had a reason to delay because the Chachamim who made up the army had just begun learning a new Masechta and he didn't want to interrupt them from that, which is a valid reason. Whatever it is, so you had those things.
He didn't study before he killed him.
He didn't. You also had the fact later on, Yoav joined in Adoniyahu's attempt to seize the throne at the beginning of Malachim. So based on all of that, before David died, he told Shlomo, make sure you deal with Yoav. So now, after David died and Shlomo has taken over the kingship, Yoav realizes he's in trouble, and the pasuk says, that he ran away to Oyel Hashem, to the Mishkan, and grabbed a hold of the corners of the Mizrach. So Amar Yehuda Amar Rashi. No, he held on to the corners of the Mizrach in order to save himself this way, Shlomo should not be able to kill him. And then we learned actually in Sanhedrin, we learned about this, that there was actually a discussion back and forth between Yoav and Benayahu about whether Yoav is Chayav Misa, and should Yoav stay over there or should he leave? Is he going to be killed as a Murid B'Malchus, in which case his property goes to the king, or is he going to be killed as executed by Beis Din, in which case his property will go to his Yoshin?
Executed by Beis Din for killing the other...
Killing Amasa.
That's right, at that point.
That's what we discussed over there in the Gemara over there. We said that first they tried to get him on the killing of Avner, and he argued that he had reason to, because he was a girl Adam, and eventually they tell him, fine, Nazel Avner, will set aside the case of Avner. What about Amasa?
How many people he killed?
Those two. Those two.
Haru can give Hasra himself?
What?
The Haru can give Hasra
himself? The Haru can give Hasra himself. Also, we have the opinion of Rabbi Yitzchak Yehuda that a Chachamim Chacham doesn't need Hasra, whatever, anyway, yeah. Anyway, Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, Shtei Toyes To Yoav Vayis Hashar. Yoav made two mistakes at that point. When he went and ran away to the Mishkan and grabbed a hold of the corners of the Mizbeach, in doing that, he thought that would protect him. He was making two mistakes. Number one, Tar Shein Akolot El Gagoy. Number one, he made a mistake. He didn't realize that only being on the top of the Mizbeach is protection, is a safe place. Vuhu Tafas B'Kav Noitzav. No, if he stands on top of the Mizbeach, that would work. But he didn't. He was standing next to the Mizbeach and holding on to the horns. That doesn't work. Vuhu Tafas B'Kav Noitzav. He's holding on to the horns. That doesn't work. And number two, Tosha and Akurat and Mizbeach Beis Elamim. The second mistake is that only the Mizbeach in the Beis Hamikdash will be Kurlit. Vuhu Tafas Mizbeach Shiloh. He grabbed a hold of the Mizbeach of Shiloh. Rashi says not actually Shiloh. Shiloh had been long since destroyed by the time of the story. It means the Mizbeach of the Bama. you have after the Mishkan Shiloh was destroyed, you had the Mishkan went to Nov and later on to Givon. Rashi says over here that actually the Mizbeach that we're talking about over here is actually what happened was during most of David's reign, the Mishkan and the Aron were in two different places. For the Aron had been captured by the Plishtim, later on was brought back to Eretz Yisrael, first to Beit Shemesh, then to Kiryat Yearim, whatever. David attempted to bring it the one time from Kiryat Yearim to Yerushalayim. That's a famous story where he had it on a wagon instead of carried by the Levium, like it's supposed to be. And this guy Uzzah tried to grab a hold of it because he saw it slipping and he was killed. So then later on, David. Because he should realize that the Aron carries itself. Later on, David tries again, and this time he has it carried by Levium, like it's supposed to be, and he successfully has it brought to Yerushalayim. He sets up a tent for the Aron, and he made a mizbeach in front of that tent where every day they would bring korbanos. But like this, at that point, you had two central mizbeaches in Eretz Yisrael. You had the one in front of the Aron in Yerushalayim, and you had the other one with the Mishkan in Givon. And that's how it lasted throughout the rest of David's reign. Because at this time, you were also allowed to have mizbeches anywhere in Eretz Yisrael. At the time, bamos were allowed. So the one in Gibbon was called the Bama Gdola. The one in Yerushalayim was one of the many bamos tanis that were allowed in Eretz Yisrael in that period. And that's how it lasted throughout the rest of David's reign and into four years into Shlomo's kingship. And then he started building the mishmitzvah, and at that point, bamos are also. So now, this Mizbeach that Yoav grabbed a hold of, Rashi says, is the one that was in Yerushalayim, the one in front of the Aron.
What was the difference?
What? No. Once the Beis Mikdash was built, you're never allowed to get again. Doesn't matter. Once it was built, that's it. Never, never again are you allowed to have
it. What's the difference between the Gagoy and the Kamesh?
The Gagoy is the top of the Mizbeach, standing on it.
How do we know that? Because you held up onto the Kamesh, you're Mokoyev. And we would have gone on the Gagoy.
Because the Pasuk says, why? Because the Pasuk says,
what's the difference?
The reason is because the Pasuk says that if a person killed, Me'im Mizbechita Kochenu Lomus, you should take him from next to my Mizbeach to be killed, implying, but if he's on the Mizbeach, then not.
Im
Mizbechita means next to it. So those are Yoav's two mistakes. So number one, that he wasn't on top of it, and number two, that it was the wrong Mizbeach. Abaya Omer, Bahonam. He was a Talmud Chacham, but even a Talmud Chacham can make mistakes. But wait, I'll tell you in a second something about this. Abaya Omer B'chon Nami Mitzatah. There's a third mistake that Yoav made as well. Tah Shein Echolat El Koyin Ba'Avoda B'Yadoi V'Hu Zaraya. It only works for a Koyin who's actually doing the Avoda, whereas Yoav was a Zara. He's from Shevet Yehuda. So therefore, it doesn't work for him B'chal. Now, so what is going on over here? Tackle why, how did Yoav come to make such a mistake? So first of all, actually, the Yerushalmi that says that actually when it says he grabbed a hold of the Kaunas and Mizbeach does not literally mean he's standing over there holding on to the horns of the Mizbeach. It means he wanted to put himself under the jurisdiction of the Sanhedrin as opposed to the king. Mm-hmm. Again, remember, there was a reason for the king to be after him because of him being a Murid B'Malchus in the whole story of Adoniyahu. Again, he didn't want to be killed as a Murid B'Malchus because then his property will be forfeit to the king's treasury. He wants to be executed by the Sanhedrin, if anything. So therefore, B'Kaunas and Mizbeach represents the idea that he put himself under the jurisdiction of the Sanhedrin and they tackle judged him. So there's a good deal of discussion about there's a good deal of discussion about this, by the way. The Rambam goes on to say, in connection with this, that this whole concept that we're saying over here, that it only works if you're on top of the Mizbeach and you're a Kohen, etc., is only applies to a person trying to save himself from Mitzvah Beis Din. However, if he's trying to save himself from Din HaMalchus, then it taka does work, even if he's a Zohar and even if he's standing next to the Mizbeach. If he's Din HaMalchus, meaning the concept that we know that a king is able to judge and execute people even if there's not the full amount of evidence that the Sanhedrin needs. Right. You were mentioning before Hasra, for example. Sanhedrin can only execute somebody if there's Edim and Hasra on the whole 9 yards. The king, Din HaMalchus, doesn't need that. If he sees that it's necessary in order to uphold society to kill somebody without... So that was the case over here. So therefore, in that sense, it's not a total mistake on Yoav's part, because at least he's saving himself from Din Malchus by holding on to the Mizbeach, even though he's a Zohar, and even though he's only holding on to the horns, and even though it's the wrong Mizbeach, etc.
He's still saving himself.
He's still saving himself from Din Malchus.
Even though he's not a
now, what it means is only the Sanhedrin can judge him, or that he can be executed. The Kesef Mishnah goes on to say that he still taka is not saving himself from being judged as a murdered Malchus. A murdered Malchus, there's no exemptions for. But Din, so this, remember, there's three possibilities. There's Sanhedrin, there's Din Malchus, and there's murdered Malchus.
He was one of them all.
To be standing up, to save himself from Sanhedrin, he would have to be a Kohen and standing on top of the Mizbeach, and the white Mizbeach. To save himself from Din Malchus, it's enough for him to be a Zor and standing next to the Mizbeach and holding on to the horns, and even at the wrong Mizbeach. To save himself from murder Malchus, none of that is going to help anyway.
How long does it stay there?
As long as necessary, I guess. Yeah, forever, basically, the same way as
it.
I guess maybe until the Kohen Gadol dies, I don't know. Okay, so then eventually he'll have to leave, and at that point he won't be vulnerable. All
right,
so at that point he'll leave, and at that point he'll be vulnerable.
But it seems the whole person
did. So he did get killed anyways, but he did get killed as he didn't get killed as a murdered the Malchus. He did, after all, get his wish to be killed either under Din Malchus or Din Sanhedrin, and therefore his property went to his Yorshim, which is what he wanted after all.
Who killed him?
We said over there that Benayahu, we lived in Sanhedrin. Benayahu, Shlomo sent Benayahu, Ben Yoyah, to kill him, and Yoyah says, we learned in the Gemara over there, look, your father put Tlolus on me for having killed Abner. If Shlomo wants to have me executed now, he has to take those Tlolus on himself and his family. And Shlomo Taka did that, and therefore Yoav said, in that case, then fine, I'm ready to die in that case. I got nothing. But then in that case, I got no way to save myself anymore. And in that case, then fine, I give in. But this distinction, by the way, this distinction, the Kesef Mishnah, by the way, is making based on the Rambam that Din Malchus is that there's a difference between Din Malchus and Morid Malchus. That was saying Din Malchus, you can be protected even by holding on to Mizbeach. Morid Malchus, not. The Sri Yaakov Weinberg has an interesting discussion about why that should be so. And basically the answer is because Din Malchus is at the discretion of the king, if he feels it's necessary.
Right.
Murid B'Malchus is an objective thing. The guy was Murid B'Malchus, and therefore he's Chayav Mitzvah. Therefore, when it comes to Murid B'Malchus, there's no leeway, there's no exceptions,
no,
you're holding on to the Mizbeach, no nothing. As opposed to Din Malchus, it's subjective. It's the king has to decide whether it's necessary to uphold society or whatever. Therefore, there's more leeway, and therefore the guy can save himself by holding on to the counters on his back.
You look at the king, and that's the wrong way. He can kill you, too.
For Murid B'Malchus, still, Tosfos talks about in some places that even Murid B'Malchus does need to be judged by Sanhedrin. That's the Tosfos mentions some place that was David's mistake in deciding that Uriah is in Murid B'Malchus without checking the Sanhedrin first.
Relationship between David and, let's say, Yonatan, Shaul's son,
yeah.
Wasn't he Murid B'Malchus by going with David?
Okay, maybe he was. So, okay, Shaul threatened him at one point. Shaul never actually killed him. Would he have been entitled to up the halacha? Maybe not. I don't know. How about it? Okay. All right. Since we're talking about mistakes that a person who's chayav misa makes, so now we have another similar thing. Amar Shlokish, Sholish Toyas Osid Sora Shol Roimi Litas. In the future, the Sar of Roimi, the Malach of Roimi, meaning Rashi identifies him as Samach Mem, the famous Malach of evil, he's going to eventually make three mistakes. Dichtiv, namely, you have a pasuk in Yeshaya that says Mize Bo, it's an aftorah of what is it? It's an aftorah of Kisavai, I think. Yeah. Mize Bome Edom, who is this who's coming from Edom? Chamutz Begodim, the one who's with red clothes, Mibotzer, he's coming from Botzerah, and it's referring to the Eibishter Kavyachol, that the Hashem has just come back from killing the Malach HaMavet, from killing the Samach Mem, and like people are wondering, what is this? Why is Hashem walking around Kavyachol in red bloodstained clothes? And he's coming from Botzerah. So what happened? But there is a Batsura in Iraq. The Batsura we're talking about over here in Pashtus is the one in Moab.
Batsura.
Whatever. Okay. In Pashtus, it's someplace in Moab. Nowadays, it would be in Jordan. There is a Batsura in Iraq also. I don't know if that, I don't think that's the same one. Anyway. So the Malach HaMavet makes three mistakes. Number one, Toya Sheni Kaletes Ela Betzer, who go to the Batsura. Number one, the Ur Miklat is Betzer, in the territory of Reuben. He mistakes it for Batsura in the land of Moab or whatever. So it's the wrong place that he runs away to. Number two, Toya Shana Kalata Sala Shogig Bahu Mazid. Number two, an Ir Miklat only works if you're Bashogig. So the Malach HaMavet has the Sultan, the Yetzer Hara, has acted amazing. And number three, number three, Toya Shane Kalata Sala Adam Bhu Malahu. Number three, the Aramikov only work for people, he's a Malah. So what's going on over here? What's the stupidity? So the Chassam Sofer actually has an interesting explanation what's the deeper idea going on over here. First of all, the Chassam Sofer says we have the three Oreb Mikvot that I mentioned in Parshas Vayetzi Chanan that Moshe set aside. They represent three ways in which a Yid can be held exempt for the Averis that they do. Betzer Bamidbar, Betzer, he says, represents humility, as if a person feels humble, then that the Eivishter is moichel a lot of their Averis for that. So therefore, Betzer represents humility, like the word Betzir Mehalchi, which means less than that in Gemara. So a person who feels himself less than other people. And that's in the territory of Reuven, because we know in this week's parasha where Rashi says, why did Leah call him Reuven? Ru'u ma ben bni leben chom. We look at the difference between my son and Esav. So we Jewish people have that quality of Betzer, of humility. But number two, you have...
Well, his father wasn't humble.
Well, okay, he moved his father's bed because he thought that he should stick up for his mother's honor. Whatever, but the point is that the Betzer represents humility.
Yeah.
Romos Bagilov represents, even if a person is Romos, a person feels proud, that's only because God, he has good mazel. God means mazel. Mm-hmm. And Golan Baboshan represents Golos, the troubles of Golos, and Boshan Ben Shini Aroyas, that were among the teeth of the lions, and Menashe, and that causes us to forget Torah and Mitzvah. So those are three, so to speak, excuses that we can use on our behalf. The Malchamavis... Yeah, the Malchamavis tries to use those excuses to save himself. So what does he do? He figures, okay, look, you know what? I'm humble also. I don't care about my own cupboard when it comes to convincing people to do Averis. Therefore, I'm humble. But he's told, no, it's the wrong kind of humility. The Jewish people are Betzer, you are Basra. It's the wrong kind. Number two, you're arguing that... And it's also, it means Basra, it also means humility, but the humility, it's the wrong kind, basically. It's a humility when it comes to hay, when it comes to things involving lacus. That's not the right kind of humility.
Right.
Number two is the Malchamavis is going to clear the Sultan, whatever, is going to claim that I was a shoygig, but no, you're not, the Jewish people can argue they were b'shoygig because of Golos or whatever. You were b'mezid, you knew very well what you were doing. And number three, you're going to argue, okay, so I have bittul to the Eibishter. I have bittul, but fine, you're a malach, of course you have bittul, that's the definition of a malach, is you're bottle tashem.
Not bittul, really, bittul is when you have an alternative to do something else.
Right, so that's the point, in other words, so we say to him, no, you're a malach, you're not a person. A person has bittul, that's a big chiddush. A malach has bittul, there's no chiddush there. And therefore, so that takes away all his excuses, and he's a god.
He's doing the shlichus of Hashem.
He's doing the shlichus of Hashem, but nevertheless, though, still he's still a force of evil that Hashem created in the world.
Well,
and as ruach atoma avim in aretz.
Well, what you just give up your shlichus? That's what
he does. No, but nevertheless, that's still a force that has to be removed from the world. And Hashem himself, Kav Yachol, is the one who goes and removes it and then kills it off. Yeah.
I mean, what do you think? His whole purpose in life is the shlichus, and then
let him
get killed also.
Okay, now, yeah, that's a part of all part of the shlichus as well. Yeah, he's created in order to eventually be destroyed. Yeah.
Yeah.